From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. There is a labor shortage across the country and in the Cape Fear region. Some are calling it the Great American Work Reassessment. Others, the Great Resignation. The Wall Street Journal reports the number of American workers leaving their jobs is at the highest level since the year 2000. According to Forbes, a record 8.1 million jobs are unfilled. Axios puts that number at 9.3 million. And many more workers say they still plan to leave their jobs. In southeastern North Carolina, at least one local official with NC Works Career Centers claims many people left the Cape Fear region during the pandemic, putting a further strain on the talent pool. The labor shortage is affecting local businesses large and small. As the critical summer tourist season unfolds in a post-pandemic North Carolina, you might already be seeing that shortage manifest in a few ways, including higher prices for meals, longer wait times in restaurants. Leisure and hospitality, a key part of this region's economic engine, dropped by 50% during the pandemic, and while the demand is coming back, the labor force is not. The unemployment rate, which tells us how many people are not working but actively looking for work, has fallen consistently in North Carolina since its peak at the beginning of the pandemic in April 2020. This April, unemployment rates decreased in 91 of North Carolina's 100 counties. Brunswick County was a full point over the statewide rate at 5.4%, but that's also a huge improvement from this time last year, when Brunswick County's rate was almost 18%. New Hanover and Pender counties were a bit lower in April at 3.9% and 3.8% respectively, but they were also hitting double-digit rates this time last year. Some claim that generous pandemic unemployment benefits have negatively impacted the workforce, preventing people from feeling the need to find a job. But North Carolina recently reinstated pre-pandemic requirements for those benefits, which include showing proof one is actively looking for work. Employers are having such a hard time finding warm bodies to show up for work, they're more eager than ever to make jobs appealing and train workers for positions they might not have previously considered them for. With me today, Adam Jones. He's a regional economist in the Swain Center and Cameron School of Business at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, where he is also an economics professor and chair of the Economics and Finance Department. Professor Adam Jones, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me.
Aaron Easton is Business Engagement Manager for the Cape Fear Workforce Development Board, which oversees NC Works Career Centers in Brunswick, Columbus, New Hanover, and Pender counties. Aaron Easton, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me today.
Good to have both of you here. Now, Forbes has called this labor shortage, in part, the result of this great American reassessment of work. What does this mean, Aaron Easton? What are people reassessing?
Yeah, so when the pandemic hit, folks realized that maybe they weren't able to keep working. They may have lost their positions, whether there was a reduction in force or a business closed. And during this time that they've had to think, they've seen different opportunities. So essentially, the workforce is being reinvented right now. Someone that was in perhaps the manufacturing industry is starting to take a look at maybe the hospitals, right? There's different career options out there, and people see this as an avenue to further their success and growth.
Adam Jones, we've heard so much about how these cushy unemployment benefits are keeping people from needing to go back to work. Is this really part of the reason that employers can't find workers because these unemployment benefits are really so comfortable?
Well, some of the data is really starting to show that that is the case. Early in the story, the sort of natural inclination was to think that this was a child care problem, especially with the large number of women who lost their jobs during the pandemic. So many just made the natural jump that, oh, it's child care that's keeping people from going back to work. But if you start to parse the data instead of just by gender, but by who has kids and who doesn't, the effects are almost the same across those with young children and those without young children, which is evidence in favor that it's probably the higher unemployment benefits keeping people from actively searching for work again.
So how long since North Carolina readjusted its requirements for getting those unemployment benefits, how long will it take for us to see that maybe smoking some people out, as I heard one journalist say, Aaron Easton?
Sure. I think it's going to take a little bit of time. People need to naturally acclimate back to going to work. Although women and having to take care of their children may not be a determining factor, that's a reality. That's one group that has to figure out, okay, what do I do now to get back into the workforce? I have my children. I need to make sure I'm making enough money at whatever new position that I have so that I can take care of them. So I think there's many different factors that we kind of need to work through as a community to see people really starting to go back in the forces or droves that the businesses are seeking right now. So I would say it's going to take us several months to start to see a bigger increase in folks returning back to the workforce.
So just pulling out a little bit, you know, zooming out and getting this kind of larger picture of the local economy, Adam Jones, what sectors really took the biggest hits from the pandemic and what's recovering? What has seen growth? Give us that picture.
Sure. As most people would probably expect, leisure and hospitality took the largest hit, with its unemployment dropping by 50% at the height of the pandemic. Many of the sectors have recovered now. So finance and insurance, for example, took a fairly small hit during the pandemic, and employment is actually up over pre-pandemic levels. But leisure and hospitality remains down 15% still, while room occupancy taxes are far exceeding what they were in 2019, pre-pandemic level. So you've got this surge in business and demand at the same time that employers are struggling to fill those positions. So in economics terms, we tend to think about supply and demand, right? The demand for workers is clearly there. It's a supply problem that those businesses are facing.
Why are we seeing room occupancy taxes go through the roof?
Because we've all spent so many nights at home, we can't bear the thought of spending another one. It's time to get out, travel again. I mean, at the risk of looking at what we sometimes joke as anecdotal data.
Okay.
I usually take one sort of reasonable length vacation, so like a week or so in the summer, and then a long weekend. This year we've got four lined up for across the summer and early fall. It's every time an opportunity shows up, we're ready to go. And I think a lot of other people are in the same spot. They're ready to get out. And southeastern North Carolina is a great spot to come.
Yeah. And so you're saying, though, that leisure and hospitality is still down about 15%?
In terms of employment, yes.
Okay. Yep. Gotcha. Gotcha. And Aaron Easton, we're going to dive into some of the details of this, but can you just sort of paint the picture? Because it's mostly the employers that you're working with. Is that right? And it's employers large and small.
Correct. I mean, from your local mom and pop, your seasonally run business, all the way to large manufacturers, the hospital systems, it really runs the gamut.
And so these employers now are talking with you about adjusting, and what kind of adjustments are we talking about? Just is higher wages one of those things?
Sure. It's definitely going to depend on the business and where they think they can make some of these changes. But I've seen small businesses and large businesses adjust wages. They're starting to compete with each other, which makes it very difficult in our community. Trading workers for mere 25, 50 cents, trying to get folks on board. So changing wages for sure. Also looking at other opportunities. So employers are starting to open their minds to helping folks that need to get back into the workforce that maybe just came out of our prison systems. They're looking at people that they wouldn't generally entertain a resume because they don't have the exact skill fit they need, but they're really opening their eyes to look at things like transferable skills to find successful employees.
What are transferable skills?
Sure. So a transferable skill could be something that you could relate to a position that you have. So perhaps somebody in the restaurant business is looking for a waitress or a server that has some experience in that. Maybe they never worked in the hospitality or restaurant industry, but they've worked at a retail store. Taking a look at that person who's able to sell at a retail side over into a restaurant and saying, hey, this person has some of the skills we need. We just need to train them to fit our needs specifically.
And that's something, Adam Jones, you have talked about micro-credentialing, which is an element of training that you say there's been a big gap in terms of where and how that happens. Can you sort of explain what that might do?
Sure. So we've been thinking about this issue separately from the pandemic, but it's along those same lines of we have a lot of folks in the region who have experience in leisure and hospitality or in the retail sector, so they have really strong customer service skills. But how do they make that jump to, say, a professional environment where they need to demonstrate proficiency in software, for example, Microsoft Excel or something like that? They just don't get that opportunity in their current positions. And that's where opportunities such as micro-credentialing, mini courses and certificates can help them demonstrate that on paper such that they get through that first screening process in the application process.
Which is something, Aaron Easton, that NC Career Centers,
NC Works,
thank you, Career Centers, that can help with, as I understand it. But let me get some details on that when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline. We're taking a closer look at the labor shortage around the country and right here in the Cape Fear region. We'll be back from this short break in 90 seconds. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The COVID-19 pandemic has had an unpredictable and perhaps unpredicted effect on the local and national employment picture. As the unemployment rate drops, more people than ever are quitting their jobs, and employers are competing for the dwindling talent pool. My guests today are looking at what these changes mean for the local economy and local employers, both large and small. Aaron Easton is the Business Engagement Manager for the Cape Fear Workforce Development Board, and Adam Jones is a regional economist with the Swain Center and Cameron School of Business at UNCW. And Aaron Easton, just before we went to break, we were talking about micro-credentialing and some of these skills. Simple skills that people may not have, they might be able to pick up through your organization. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Yeah, really important that in this time, as we've been talking about, employers are giving different people opportunities. So it's also a great opportunity for job seekers to seek new credentials, even small credentials. The NC Works Career Centers definitely helps people to explore different training options from our local community colleges to UNCW and beyond. So we're really working with folks that are looking to go back into the workforce, gain some new skills, and oftentimes that means short-term programs where they can get a new credential, something under their belt to give them a little bit more oomph as they're looking at different careers in our area.
And when we talk about the different sectors, Aaron, manufacturing and construction are some of those that continue to grow, but you've said this region has had some difficulty with manufacturing even before the pandemic. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Manufacturing has struggled historically to find a workforce that's meeting their demand. So the supply isn't there. So we're really working heavily with manufacturers right now in the region to listen to their voices to truly figure out what is it that they need and how can we assist with a pipeline of individuals to support their growing needs. They haven't necessarily stopped growing, but the workforce has slowly started to trickle in that they need to continue to see these different advancements that they're having here in our region. So it's a good problem to have, but they definitely need support in finding the right workforce to support all of their growth.
And what are some of the ways that the Cape Fear Workforce Development Board is helping them adjust?
Sure. So back in December of 2020, we helped to form a partnership called the Cape Fear Manufacturing Partnership, which consists of about 25 local manufacturers in our region. They came together in a working meeting to discuss with each other where they see the struggles, where they think they could make some impact. And then they're calling upon places like the Workforce Development Board, the community colleges, the chambers, and all these different public partners to assist with their initiatives.
So where are the struggles?
The largest struggle really kind of stems from an understanding that the manufacturing sector has some great job opportunity out there. Folks see it kind of as a dead-end job. You think back to when your father used to work in manufacturing, maybe it was a dirty job, it really didn't go anywhere, but that's not the case these days. There's really a lot of room for succession planning, upward mobility, changing departments. The first step is getting your foot in the door to realize some of those things. So the partnership is really trying to elevate the industry in the area to show people in middle school, parents, high school students, and even some of the older workforce that opportunity exists. And they need to see that given the right opportunity, they could really enhance their career into something long term.
So you're talking about employers now looking at the difference between offering people jobs and offering people careers.
Yeah, which is a big thing, right? So especially when you think about something like manufacturing, it often was just a job. You go to get paid each week, but there really is an opportunity in manufacturing, especially in our area, for advancement that is unknown to many folks. So this partnership is geared towards helping to ensure that we can change that maybe negative connotation that the industry has into something positive and also help people be successful in our area.
UNCW regional economist Adam Jones, you have observed this sort of migration away from a capitalist economy, I think is what you called it, in the 1940s, over the decades, to what you're calling a service economy now. And how does this need for manufacturers, for example, bear out this migration that you've observed?
Well, there's a lot there, so let's try and cover it quickly and without overdoing the stats. But in the 1940s, the service sector was a little bit larger than the goods-producing sector. So the service sector was somewhere around, say, 54% of employment, and the goods-producing sector was about 46. So in my mind, simple terms, I call those about even, especially compared to today, where the service sector is about 86% of employment, and the goods-producing sector is more like 14% of employment. Now, these are nationwide. Cape Fear region's fairly similar. And when a lot of people hear that, what they take away is, oh, employment opportunities in manufacturing are going away and it's changing. But we produce more stuff in the U.S. than we ever have before. So what's really happening in manufacturing is this explosion of innovation and the way stuff is done. It's not dirty manual labor anymore. These are now skilled jobs where equipment and technology is complementary to those individual skill sets. So to Aaron's point, it's a very different world than, well, maybe some of us grew up in, or certainly previous generations. A lot of good opportunities there. And in terms of thinking about that shift in where our employment is. So back in the 1940s, if you think about quote unquote capitalism as being the owner of the resources, the owner of the factory, firm, and equipment as the one who takes the profits and the workers are just workers there, in this more service sector driven and intellectual capital driven world, now it's fundamentally the individual who owns the valuable skills. And it's their skills, their intelligence, their creative thinking, their problem-solving ability that generates the value. So we've really seen this shift in the way we should probably think about the world as the U.S. economy has evolved.
And what does that mean then in terms of developing future employees? What should we be teaching them and telling them about their future work that we're not telling them now?
I think part of it is that they need to be comfortable being uncomfortable. So going into ambiguous situations where the answer isn't necessarily clear and figuring it out, that's where they really deliver value. If it can be written down and easily solved or easily explained to somebody, then that's a position that's maybe not going to pay very well or can be automated. The return is to the creativity and the individual skills.
So if you can Google it, it's not worth that much. But if you can figure something out that's original because of the way your brain works, that's where your power is.
For sure. I had an opportunity to chat with a UNCW alum over the weekend. And I said, what are you doing now? Because I haven't seen him in almost a decade, probably. And he said, oh, I get paid to solve problems. I said, what does that mean? He says, well, I think on my business card it says I'm a software engineer, but really I manage a team, and every time something weird comes up, they throw it my way. And that's my value, is solving problems that we just haven't seen before. And I think that's a great example of where the opportunities are today.
Yeah. And Aaron Easton, a little earlier you mentioned that some employers are considering, among other things, raising wages. And you mentioned like 25 or 50 cents. That's enough in some sectors to lure people back to the table or back to the job site?
So I would say that's enough for competing industries to take employees and kind of trade off and on. Job seekers that are re-entering the workforce are probably seeking something a little bit more substantial. So when I've worked with some local businesses as of late, we're looking more at $1, $2, $3 changes in salary to entice folks to come back into the workforce after the pandemic.
What are some of the other elements on which employers are willing to be flexible? I mean, you mentioned that they're willing to train, or they're willing to think about people being trained through a community college or some other portal for special skills. But are there other elements of taking on a worker that employers are starting to think, okay, if this is a work-life balance, then I need to help create a better quality of life for this human?
Yes, I've definitely seen that quality of work-life balance come into play. Employers are having to start to adjust to what we're used to, telecommuting, the more working from home, even if it's not full-time, where it's possible, allowing people to have that flexibility definitely entices them to want to come back. If I can be home, getting up with my kids in the morning and then hopping on my computer, it can make the world of difference for parents, especially, that don't have to commute, even if it's not a long commute. So that whole idea of people can succeed at home, I think employers are starting to realize that, and that's a carrot for some of these folks to get back into the industry for sure.
And you had mentioned that you know of people leaving the Cape Fear region during the pandemic. Why is that? Why have we lost people?
Yeah, that's a great question. As the Cape Fear region continuously grows, as we've seen with traffic patterns and, you know, the amount of businesses coming to the region, people did leave. I think a lot of people left because of that family piece. We are a lot of transient folks here. And when the pandemic occurred, people lost positions. It was time to move back to your roots and where you were from. So we definitely lost people that way. And it certainly affected local business. I've seen many businesses having to hire more remote positions than they would like to or have in the past. So they're really having to look outside of our region for employees at this time.
And Adam Jones, I know this is asking you to look into a crystal ball probably of sorts, but when we talk about more remote employees, do you know what kind of an impact that's going to have on companies' productivity or like how that's going to change the economy and change our lives?
Yeah. Well, I can speculate as much as anybody else can, Before we get to that, to follow up on Aaron's point about people leaving the region, we don't have numbers on migration yet, but if we look at the size of the labor force, we're down about 6,000 workers from where you would have expected it pre-pandemic. So that could be people that have decided they're not going to play in the labor force game anymore, search for work or work, or it could be folks that moved out of the region. So those are certainly consistent ideas with each other.
How do you distinguish between those two in a data sense? Well,
eventually we will, but there are lags in the population data and the migration data. So this will all be long behind us by the time that data comes out. But the labor force data comes out on a fairly frequent business or a fairly frequent timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So to get back to your question from a minute ago about what does this mean for productivity, we've spent a lot of time speculating about it. And there are some reports out there showing that productivity is actually higher for remote workers. Now, the question is it a sustainable increase in productivity, or is that because they're no longer being interrupted, so they're focused at home? But with the disappearing interruptions also means that a lot of that sort of creative innovation disappears with it as well. So I can be really productive at home by myself on a Friday for a while, but I need to come in and bounce ideas off of colleagues to take that next step forward. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And it seems like the East Coast and the West Coast think of this very differently. The East Coast seems to think that we need to bring the workers back to the office and get them in close proximity to each other to drive productivity forward. The West Coast seems to be much more comfortable with the work remote model.
Why do you think there's a difference there?
It could be industry differences. It could also be that so much West Coast business is technology, and they probably have stronger systems in place for it and cultures built around it, whereas it's new to, say, Wall Street, for example, where they're used to being in close proximity to each other.
Right. Do you think, going back to just unemployment benefits and where people are, like if they left or if they're just hunkering down and still enjoying the unemployment benefits, are some people on unemployment benefits and making money off the books, Adam Jones?
So if they're making money off the books, we can't see that necessarily.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure some of that is happening. So as an economist, we tend to think that people are self-interested, which kind of gets a bad rap, but I think makes intuitive sense if you say, what does that mean? That means people are going to do what's best for them. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So I hesitate a little to say people are enjoying the unemployment benefits or what sometimes gets referred to as fun employment. Just I put myself in that position. If someone said, hey, how would you like to work 40 hours a week and take a big pay cut? I'm going to say, no, thank you. I'll continue on this system until it ends. So we've set up the incentives for them to stay home and stay on those benefits until they run out.
Right. What are we seeing in terms of the four counties that you serve, Aaron Easton, with the Cape Fear Workforce Development Board? Are there differences among Brunswick, Columbus, New Hanover, and Pender counties in terms of the needs?
There are some similarities, but definitely differences, especially if you think about the landscape. I mean, New Hanover County would be considered more kind of condensed, right? We have a lot of bigger business, a lot of the hospitality industry kind of all centralized here. When you go a little bit further out to Brunswick, Columbus, and Pender County, we're starting to get a little bit more rural and spread out. So their needs are similar in the respect that everyone needs a workforce. We've got hospitality in Pender, New Hanover, and Brunswick, which are all, I would say, on equal playing fields of their need right now. But the differences are folks being able to be transporting themselves to work. So it's much easier in New Hanover County to accept a position when we've got a transit system, a bus system, Uber's easily available. When you go out to some of these more rural counties, it makes it much more difficult for people to go back to work. they need to also consider, how much is that going to cost me in gas? Do I need to get the brakes fixed? What do I need to do to get to work? And that comes into play if they're offered a position, when they're looking at the different pay that they're being offered too. So sometimes it's not as enticing, as Adam was saying, to go back if you can't make ends meet based on the salary that's being given or the opportunity that's sitting there for you.
And that leads to questions about transportation. Is that something that some employers have started to consider and fold into a package of sorts? Is that something employers can do something about?
So I have heard and seen that happen in other regions in our state. It's a really great thing that I think employers should start considering here that I've not seen a big impact with yet here.
Yeah, and that also goes to the question of public transportation. And Adam Jones, we're going to be going to break in just a minute or so, but is that something that could boost the economy? We've heard so much about how public transportation is really something that the government just has to pay for, suck it up and pay for it. But
it's certainly an important part of having liquidity in our labor force, right? Their ability to get to and from positions and make good matches. Many years ago, when we were looking at the economic impact of MARTA in Atlanta, where its big benefit was is that it extended the reach of employers so that they could make better matches with employees and the productivity benefits that came from it. So transportation is definitely part of it, and having a good transportation system, public transportation system, is important, because if you got to ride 3 buses, your time cost is really high of that trip.
You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of the labor shortage and what it means for workers and the local economy. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're exploring how the pandemic has affected the labor market, why employers, large and small, in the Cape Fear region are having to rethink what they offer workers and what this opportunity might mean for people who've wanted to change careers. My guests today are Adam Jones, regional economist with the Swain Center and Cameron School of Business at UNCW, and Aaron Easton, business engagement manager for the Cape Fear Workforce Development Board, which oversees NC Works career centers in Brunswick, Columbus, New Hanover, and Pender counties. And Aaron Easton, we were talking just before the break about public transportation and reliable transportation and the impact that a commute of some distance can have on whether someone's willing to take a job. But this makes me wonder about affordable housing, because I've heard from a business owner that I know in Southport, for example, which is not an inexpensive place to live in Brunswick County. It's at the confluence of the Cape Fear River and the Atlantic Ocean. And she has said that for years she's had difficulty not just hiring, but keeping staff, qualified staff, for her business, because they can't afford to live in the city of Southport, and she can't pay all of them enough to live in the city of Southport. How does that factor into what the Cape Fear Workforce Development Board is doing?
Sure. I think we've all seen that and felt it even as of late. So we have this shortage of employment and workers, but we have the housing market where it's very expensive to buy something, even more through the pandemic. We saw a rise in the cost of homes and people selling homes. Rent has increased for many people. So when we think about that from the board's perspective, we're probably not going to have a huge impact on the dollars that are going into housing, but what can we do to have an impact on job seekers, perhaps finding positions where they can have an elevated pay or increased pay of what they're used to? So partnering with businesses through programs like on-the-job training to offer people the skills that they need in a training atmosphere that's on the job site. With younger professionals, looking at things like work experience. So I may not have the experience I need from the credentialing or the schooling aspect, but if I can have an employer that would provide me an opportunity to gain some skills, then I have something on my resume that could afford me an opportunity to have a higher paying position. And I think it all kind of crosses over into what we were talking about before with transportation. Brunswick County residents are oftentimes driving over the bridge to come to New Hanover County, where they believe, and sometimes it's true, they can get a higher wage. But that higher wage has to be it's got to be very tempting, right? Because I've got to take into consideration my housing, my transportation, and all of that. So I think there's some ways we can help to enhance job seekers' skills and ability through different programs. Working specifically or directly with businesses is most important to gain the hands-on experience that they need.
And Adam Jones of UNCW, certainly affordable housing has been a big part of the development conversation here in the Cape Fear region for years, and there are some new initiatives along those lines. But what does that do for a local economy when you have more affordable housing and diversity in housing?
Well, I think you need to think about the economy and economic development from sort of an ecosystem approach. Right. We often talk about economic development being focused on creating high-paying jobs in the community. But if we create high-paying jobs and those jobs go to the folks from outside the community, then we really haven't done any economic development for our current residents. So we need to figure out how to match the opportunities to the existing residents, create higher-paying opportunities for those residents that match their skill set. And if we think about the affordable housing piece, there are two sides to that. One, we've got to create housing that matches their ability to pay. But the other side of affordable housing is how much can they afford to pay for housing? And if we can do the economic development work to raise that, maybe we can approach this problem from two different angles.
And this is probably asking you to write a textbook, but hey, it's what I do. What is the economic development work to develop more affordable housing? I mean, are there a few bullet points that you could lay out for that?
So I probably shouldn't speak too much into an area that I don't spend a lot of time working in. But part of it is working with developers to understand what are their pain points, what's keeping them from building more affordable housing, and figuring out if there's a compromise or change in regulations that we can all agree on to help address some of that. So that might be changes in the code. It might be changes in setbacks. But I'm not an expert on that since I'm not a developer. So I probably shouldn't say too much, and we'll let you set up your next show with that.
Well, thank you for that forward promotion. That's excellent. And Aaron Easton of the Cape Fear Workforce Development Board, knowing that you work with the employer side of things and businesses large and small who are trying to grapple with this new reality, whether it's a long-term reality or not. Tell us about some of the conversations that you've had with, for example, I think there's a small business in Topsail that you've been coaching.
Yeah, so it really kind of runs the gamut, my conversations, when we're talking about a need. Everybody needs a need for a workforce, right? There's one local business in Topsail that I had been assisting, a local restaurant that's been around for a number of years, family run, passed down from generation to generation. And this summer was the first summer where they were questioning if they could be open for a full service restaurant or if they would have to continue just doing doing partial full service and takeout just due to lack of staff. So it's really hitting some of these small business owners and large business owners in a very profound way, something that they're not used to. It's peak season here for tourists and having to deal with, are we going to be able to be open and serve all these people that come see us every year? Or are we just going to have to do takeout? Really is a tough decision to have to make.
Yeah. And when you think about businesses needing to offer employees higher wages or other elements of, you know, better benefits, perhaps, whatever those additions might be to the package, what does this mean for prices in the longer term view, Adam Jones? I mean, are we going to see all kinds of prices go up here in the Cape Fear region because it's so tough to find workers?
Well, certainly some of that is going to filter through. And more so in some products than others. But one thing we often forget is that labor is only one component of producing an item or a service. And if we pay a little bit more for labor, that doesn't mean, say you pay 10% more for labor, it doesn't mean that all prices are going to go up by 10%. So some of it will definitely filter through. But I think some of the concerns about cheeseburgers costing $15 are probably overblown. But there will be some downstream impact from it.
And in the shorter term, where are these businesses going to find all these workers that they need?
That's a really difficult question. We're starting to hear some conversation about increased employment of high school kids and teenagers and college kids, but there aren't enough of them to make up that gap. I mean, you're talking about 500,000 more teenagers working now than in the past, which nationwide. So that sounds like a large number to us until we consider the fact that you're like 3 million workers short in the 25 to 54 demographic. There just aren't enough teenagers to solve this problem. So we're going to have to think creatively about how to get some of these folks to come back in. That might look like talking about not just higher wages, but also long-term benefits of a good position. So get them to think career versus job, and that this is their opportunity to select that good career, maybe take that jump up or move into something else that they really wanted to be in before.
And I'm wondering if retirees, since this part of North Carolina attracts so many people who have retired. And of course, many of them are affluent and they come here because they get a bigger bang for their housing buck than they might where they came from. And there are also beaches. But Aaron Easton, is this going to be an emerging part of the labor force here? Do you see any evidence of that?
A little bit of trickling. I think you're right to say that many of them have retired. They're more affluent right now, so working isn't top on their priority list, right? But I do feel we had an outdoor career fair the other day, and a gentleman who fits the bill that you're saying did come up to us and asked, "Hey, you know, I'm getting bored. I want to dabble in some things." And he was a retiree that moved from upstate New York down here and wanted to dabble in the restaurant industry, right? So I think we may hear more and more of that. It's something for those folks to do. Wage isn't generally a concern for them. As Adam said, the high schoolers, probably not enough, but we're seeing more high school type age folks get opportunities that they wouldn't have in the past. I really think it's more about training and developing and us thinking more long-term into this kind of pipeline approach, getting folks to understand what opportunities there are in our region and starting to mold them at a younger age. So not necessarily the quick fix that everybody wants to see, but something that's more long-term and sustainable.
So just curious about this guy. Was he wanting to dabble as a server or as in the kitchen or what? It just sounds very unusual.
I know, right? He actually took a position in a kitchen, but they were working him 7 days a week because of their need. And that's not what he signed up for. So he was saying, "Hey, I'm willing to do other things. I kind of like the flow of the restaurant business, but I don't want to work 7 days a week," which is unfortunately what's happening right now. We're overworking some of our hospitality workers.
Can I be real optimistic for a minute?
Please.
Sometimes it's when we're really struggling that we make the big improvements. And the Aaron's point about training workers and taking a chance on some people and training up their skills, high schoolers entering the labor market, this is really building our human capital going forward and should contribute to productivity in the longer run. So it's tough now, but hopefully this means good things for all of our workers in the future.
So it's forcing a necessary and positive constructive change is what you're saying.
That's my optimistic way of looking at it.
Which
yes.
is really nice, because in another conversation you asked me if you could be completely cynical. So I prefer this side. But is this also going to create a workforce of happier, more fulfilled workers?
That's an interesting question. I would hope so. But I'm not sure that we have enough data to suggest that yet. But as people develop their skills and develop control over their own careers, because then they have opportunities across industries or across companies, to the extent that they feel as though they have agency over their lives, control over their lives, that should make them more satisfied, happier. As they contribute more, they'll become more satisfied. So I think this is good for the employers and the employees. And that's also one of the maybe unintended consequences of unemployment insurance. So one of the reasons that it's provided is obviously to try and help maintain a standard of living, or at least a subsistence standard of living, for those who are unfortunate and lose their jobs. But this other unintended consequence to it is it provides people enough time that they can search and make a good match. And the better match they make, the more likely they are to stay, be productive, and feel satisfied.
And speaking of feeling satisfied, if there was someone who has been in a job for a while, they are employed, Aaron Easton, but really not happy, looking for a career change, but because they've been in their career for a little while, feel totally unqualified to jump out and do the things that really appeal to them. Is there an opportunity for that person?
Absolutely. We talked about a little bit earlier that we're seeing more people leaving the workforce. So it wasn't just people that lost their positions during the pandemic. Some folks are choosing to leave, and they're choosing to leave because they see that better opportunity. The work-life balance we've talked about, organizations that are offering higher pay or perhaps better benefit packages. So people are really exploring their options. And even if you're someone looking to change careers, there's training opportunities for you too. So it's important to know that we have resources in our community that can assist all different types of people.
And especially for smart people with good attitudes, because you've been hearing stories, haven't you, about people just not even showing up for job interviews they've booked.
Yeah, that's tough. Lots of employers, or well, I wouldn't say lots, a handful of employers have gotten back to me that people aren't showing up for interviews. People aren't accepting offers, which is not part of how the structure of unemployment is worked, right? When you receive unemployment benefits, you're required to show up for your interviews. If you qualify, you're required to accept a position. And that can be scary to the businesses, because they're wondering, well, who's actually going to show up and go back to work? But we are slowly starting to get more and more positive feedback from businesses, even as of last week, where people are starting to hire, not at the rate they need, but they're getting people trickling in that they think are good matches. So there's some positive movement happening in our region.
And very briefly, if someone did want to look for a job or just see what opportunities were out there, how can they find you, or where should they go with the Cape Fear Workforce Development Board and CWorks Career Centers?
Yeah, so for job seekers or people wondering what else is out there if you're currently employed, the easiest way is to go online to www.ncworks.gov, and you can search the entire state database of positions that are open, from small, large businesses, any industry you can think of, with pay scales, salaries, the benefits that are offered. So it's a really robust system to start looking for a new opportunity.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Aaron Easton of the Cape Fear Workforce Development Board and regional economist Adam Jones of UNCW, thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Andrew Craig engineered this episode. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode or want to listen again, look for it at whqr.org, find it on Spotify, Stitcher, or iTunes. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.